God,
grant me the serenity
to accept the things that cannot
change,
the courage to change the things I can,
and the wisdom to know differences.
Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anybody in the room tonight in their first 30 days of sobriety? We really would just like to welcome you by first name. You have permit. You can unmute and say hello if you'd like. Anybody? All right. And so let's see. That's it. Preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous says, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So the format of this meeting is an open speaker ask it basket. Tonight, we are very excited to welcome Eric and to tell his story. He's from Vancouver, I believe. And so after Eric tells his story, we'll somewhere around the top of the hour, we'll allow him a break and we'll call for announcements past the seven tradition basket. And then we'll reconvene and ask the questions that you submit. So be thinking about questions and feel free to submit them anytime to the user questions. So very excited to have Eric tonight. And I don't want to take up another minute of his time. Eric, thank you so much for coming to share with us tonight. I give you Eric.
Hey, good afternoon or evening. God bless. Alcoholic Eric. My sobriety date is April 8th, 2001. I have a home group here in Canada. It's the Aloha Spirit, and I have a home group on Zoom. It's a Pacific group. I can see your hands there, Harmony. We like that. Thank you. And I think it was Harmony that we met first out of your group, and we met her in Los Angeles. And then my wife got to speak at her first meeting Mid-Atlantic group. And there was a bunch of us that came there, and there were even people that came for the first time and have stayed sober. I like that part. And so that's great. Norfolk, Virginia. We actually have been to Virginia as a family. We went to a couple of football camps in Williamsburg. We went up to Virginia Beach, which the home of Al-Anon. Woo! And I really liked Virginia Beach. And then my brother was on loan. He was Canadian an officer in the Canadian Navy, and he was lent to your Navy for 2 years. He did not come to AA. but I was told he had a very good time from what he remembered. So if you're new here or you're coming back, maybe you're suffering and you hate AA, you're gonna hate me. I've loved AA since the day I came. And for that, I'm really grateful. And what happened for me is I was a kid that was born to a Scottish father and a German mother. They were immigrants. As a young kid, they made my brother wear a kilt, but they made me wear lederhosen. But that didn't make me an alcoholic. Well, maybe. But what happened, though, it did make me a cheap, stubborn drunk. And I was actually encouraged. The kids in my family were encouraged to drink. We drank what was called a shandy, which was half beer and half ginger ale. And I didn't like it. Didn't like it at all. And I was one of those kids that always had a job. I had a paper route and I saved money and I picked berries and I saved money and I turned 15 and I got a job with all these cool kids at McDonald's. And they had a staff party. And that's when it started. And I had an objective that night going to that staff party. I wanted to lose my virginity. Didn't work out. I woke up at 4 a.m. on a couch. Actually, I was quite grateful I didn't lose my virginity because I woke up in the same room as two other men. And And I'll tell you this, I felt so bad. Like I was crushed. I like the pain. I don't know what you guys were like, but hangovers for me were brutal from day one. It like my hair would hurt. Eh? Like, and I was a guy that knew he could never drink every day. Like it wasn't something I fell in love with. And, but what happened is I just carried on. And, what I developed very quickly in high school, and I worked my way through different restaurants, is I had a secret life. On the weekends, I drank with these people I worked with in restaurants. And in the 12th grade, I got a job as a dishwasher in a steakhouse. And the drinks would come back, the plates would come back. We'd clean off the plates before we put them in the dishwasher. And I would take like, you know, melted ice and a little bit of rum and Coke, and we ran it through a funnel. And then there would come, you know, some celery and a lime and some Clamato juice with vodka, and we run it through the funnel. And we'd have this awful mix by the end of the night. We would drink that, we'd get drunk. And I loved that secret life. And I was the guy in high school that studied very hard during the week. I was an academic award winner. And on the weekends, I didn't go to high school parties. I worked in this restaurant. I had this secret life and I didn't want to share it with anyone. I had the perfect job. And then I went to university and I waited tables, another dream job, cash and booze. That was fantastic. And by the time I graduated, actually the night I graduated from university, I was living with two women at the time. One was my ex-girlfriend. They made the mistake of giving me the rent money. And I went out for a couple of drinks and I was going to meet a girl for a first date. And I guess I spent all the money because I had none of it the next day, but I woke up in detox and I woke up in a tunnel under a bridge about a block and a half from our Orlando club. And I'll tell you, when I got out of that detox, I was scared. I knew that my lifestyle, I just could not carry on. And I was so scared. I didn't drink for a week. But what I did do during that week is I found that girl from the first date. I moved in with her. I didn't tell her I was moving in. I just took my two sports equipment bags and with my, you know, all my possessions, and I moved in and I stayed with her for 17 years. It was absolutely out of convenience. And she was in wholesale clothing. I was a sample size. And that's the only thing we had in common. I stayed with her for 17 years. We had two children. I ended up with a career that I went into after university. And I remember being interviewed for that job. And I interviewed with the guy. And then the boss came in and he had to stamp the deal. And I insulted him. He was very suntanned. I told him he looked like leather. And he said, "You'll never work for me." And I apologized promptly. And he and I went out for drinks and we ended up business partners. And we stayed together for a long time until he eventually drank himself to death. And I'll tell you this, I was not like him. He made alcoholism so unattractive. I had no desire to drink every day. And what I did do is I wasn't a drinker per se. I was a partier. And if you're new here, a partier is somebody that has fun doing it. And I had a ton of fun. I considered myself a great boss. I was the type of boss that if I took you out for drinks, we were celebrating. I provided LSD, mushrooms, and cocaine. And I had a lot of staff turnover. It didn't work out that well. And I ended up getting an impaired charge. I got an impaired charge. And what happened in that impaired charge is I was away for a weekend. I was on a road trip and it was an Olympic year, I think. And I remember reading banned substances from the Olympics. And I'm going, I can't believe it. They're telling us what to take. And I took a bunch of ephedrine and I got caught drinking and driving in a campsite, 50 feet from the campsite. And the police officer said, "You're 50 feet from the campsite. I'm gonna let you go." I go, "Thank you." And he left. I looked at the guy beside me. I said, "Where's Sean?" Because he wasn't in the back seat. He goes, "I think we left him in town. He was sleeping in the dugout at the baseball park in this small town. So I drove back to town and I got caught again. And just in the state of Oregon, in Hood River County, they don't think it's funny to get caught twice. And what happened there is they processed me. I got a lawyer, and the lawyer said to me, they are going to ask you 20 questions. And it's the Johns Hopkins 20 questions to see if you're an alcoholic. She said, do not answer more than two of those questions, yes, or they will make you go to AA. So I said, okay. And so I just answered the two, you know, have you ever missed work because of your drinking? Yes. Have you ever been hospitalized? Yes. But those are the only two. And they didn't make me go to AA, but they did make me go to court-ordered counseling. I had to attend that court-ordered counseling on the weekends. I had to do a diversion program. I had to attend a prison and listen to families that had lost people to drinking and driving. And when I used to cross the border to do that because it happened in your country. And I used to have a six pack of beer right between my legs and I'd go to that. And I didn't think twice of it. I didn't think it applied to me. I just had to get a certain amount of these counseling sessions behind me, finish this course, and off I was. And I even ended up getting a pardon. And the way you get the pardon is you give them money and they give you a little form and they say, hey, you got pardoned. And then what happened was, I kept going on in my merry way. That business partner of mine drank himself to death. He died. And by the time he died, I don't know if he hated me, cause I didn't see him for 2 years. He didn't come to work for 2 years, but I hated him. And, we lost that business. It was horrible when, you know, like my life just started crumbling. The partying wasn't partying anymore. It was a desperation to it, right? I was just trying to escape. I was trying to have fun. I was actually a very dishonest husband. Those vows meant nothing to me. And the thing too is, when I was sober, I'd say, I'm never doing that again. I can't. It's killing me. It's killing my soul. And then I'd have a drink, and then I'd have another drink. I'd look at the time. I'd make a phone call. I'd get something that allowed me to drink a little longer, and off I went again. And it was just like this awful cycle. And it got to the point where I wouldn't drink on paydays, New Year's. And it was more like Sunday nights, Tuesday nights, school nights, because, you know, like, I was more of a professional. I got into some real pain in my back. I hurt myself very badly. I was taking painkillers. So I'm eating a lot of Percocet, eating a lot of Percodan, taking Tylenol 3s. But I could get off those for a while if I snorted enough cocaine. And I could get off the cocaine if I drank enough vodka. And then I went through this period, which I think is quite popular right now too, is of doing hallucinogenics. And then the problem would happen is I'd say, well, I'll do this. But what happens for a guy like me is when you get high, you forget you're high and you start drinking. Or if I start drinking, I forget I'm drunk and I get high. And so it was just going to crap. I'd lost my business. I'm working for this other company. And I walk in the office one day and we got this new person. And God knew what it would take to get my attention. I'm like, oh my goodness, look at this. And this woman talked low and dressed becomingly. And I was just being myself. I said a few witty things. And the woman beside her got quite upset. And I did this another time and I would say these witty things. And she pulled me aside and she said, you know what? You're not very funny. I'm like, wow, that's pretty mean. And what happened is I would come in after lunch and one day I came in a little late for work, you know, and she says I was missing a shoe. I don't remember that part, but I did have the same suit on and the tie was a little crooked and it was sort of a look. And she says to me, what illegal activities were you up to? And supposedly I lost my temper. And she said, when I lost my temper the way I did, that she thought maybe I have a problem with alcohol and drugs. And it improved from there though, because the next time I saw her, she said, I had a dream about you. Yeah. And so she had a dream about me. And I said, you know, I really like to hear about the dream. And she goes, you know what? This really isn't the place to talk about it. I said, you know, I really think it is. I'd like to hear about the dream. And I would just bug her. And then maybe after a couple of weeks, she said, you know what? I'm going to go out for coffee and maybe you'd like to join me. And I go, oh, absolutely. And so we went, and as we're going down the elevator, she goes, you know, actually I'm going to go for wheatgrass and a juice. And I said, you're not going to believe this. This is a temple. I have nothing but respect for my body. I'll join you in the wheatgrass and the juice. And we go, and what happened is for my sake, she recounted and shared the horrors of her past. And I went, you know what? You can stop right now. If you're telling me I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict, you can stop. I don't need to hear it. And she said, you know what? I haven't told you anything about me. I just told you my story and you related to everything. I went, oh boy. And then I called this guy that I like to party with. And I said, you know, I was just told that I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict. What do you think? And he goes, no crap. And he hung up. Until that point, I called him my best friend. I never spoke to him again. And so I'm going, oh man, this is getting bad. And so when I got back to the office, I lean in, and the woman that shared this story, her story with me, she said, there's one thing I ask. We work together. Can you please respect my anonymity? I'm like, of course. So I went back to the office and I told everybody, did you know that she's an alcoholic? And I had to learn about our tradition there. So what I did learn was, I can break my anonymity, but I have to respect yours. And that was a great lesson, right? That was like my first lesson in life on how to treat people, is just learning about one of our traditions before I even got sober. But this woman was very busy. She was a single mom with two kids. She had a very, very full life. One day I come in the office, there's 15 bouquets of flowers. I'm like, oh my God, is she loved? And 10 days later, 15 bouquets of flowers. I'm like, oh my God, she is loved, or she goes out with the guiltiest guy on the planet. And what it came down to was I found out it was her belly button birthday and then her AA birthday, and her sponsees had showered her with gifts. So I am leaning in every day. I've got to find out more about this person. This is the first person that's ever held my interest in my life. Most people I don't give a crap about. And I'm like listening in, finding out more. And I'm like, who gave you the flowers? She goes, oh, these dynamic women that I share my life with. I'm like, what? So I just ask these questions. She goes, look, I'm really busy. And because I have a full life, I go, she goes, I get my exercise in at lunch. I'm going for a run. Well, I went for 7 runs with her and I joined AA. And I'm telling you, I'm like, oh my God. And so then I made this commitment to go to AA. It came down to this. I think I might go to one of those meetings you talked about. And she goes, I know a perfect one. She goes, Tuesday night, there's a guy your age. He's going to share his story. He's 2 years sober. So I'm like, okay. And so I met her for coffee. She was actually meeting a sponsee, I find out later, for coffee at this place. And she just said, that's where I'm going to be. That's not what I heard. I heard, please join me for coffee. So I walk in. There she is with this woman. I was 2 years sober before I realized who that woman is. I don't know about you guys. I'm a little self-obsessed. So what I did is I left that coffee place and I go to this meeting at 29th and Marine, which is literally 7 blocks from where I'm living right now. And what it was too, is where I lived at the time was 2 bridges away. And it was a great idea to go to a meeting 2 bridges away. Because I don't know about you guys. I didn't want anyone to know I was an alcoholic. What I realized is I didn't want to know anyone to know that I want to live open-minded, honest, and willing, right? Like, what a foreign concept. I don't mind you knowing that I pee my pants, throw up, park cars illegally, steal cars, borrow cars, but I don't want anyone to know I'm an alcoholic. So I go to this meeting at 29th and Marine. It's called Tuesday No Smoke, and I'm cutting through the parking lot, and it started. I could tell sobriety by the parking lot. The cars had all been washed. They were new. And you know what I could tell? They were paid for. And I walked into the meeting and there's this group of people like I've never seen in my life. They're a lot like you. Like I see Kathy and I see Calvin and wearing bright colors and Scott, bright colors, right? Before I came to AA, everything in my wardrobe was black. And all of a sudden I'm in this room, like foil, you got that great lime green on. It's like, it's bright. And I'm just going, wow. And the whites of your eyes are white and you're friendly. And this woman at the front that looks like the mother I hate says to me, welcome. Wow. And I said, I loved AA from the day I showed up, right? This is the first place I've ever been where they said, will you speak? Wow. What an amazing organization. And so what happened is in that first meeting, the basket comes around. I don't know if you know what was said. Even though that there's that guy that shared that was my age and all that, the one thing he said that I did relate to was he goes, he came from a family where they didn't talk about anything. No one discussed anything important. And I related to that. But what happened near the end of the meeting, the basket came around and the person beside me put their hand over the basket. I go, why won't you take my money? They go, we'll explain after the meeting. And after the meeting, I had another tradition explained to me. They said, we have a seventh tradition. We do not accept outside contributions. I go, what do I have to do for you to take my money? And they go, like the week before, the bartender was taking my money. There were people, I was buying drinks for people I didn't know, didn't like. They were drinking my booze. All of a sudden I'm in AA, they won't take my money. So they say, well, you have to join. I go, oh, how do you join? They go, you have to get a home group. I go, oh, and they go, there's a really good one for you at 10 o'clock Sunday morning called Kitson. So I went to that meeting. I go to that meeting. I actually ran into a guy that I played men's hockey with. I go, oh my God, I didn't even think you were that bad. I didn't think he was that bad because the last time I drank with him, he was doing shots mixed with Pepto-Bismol. I actually thought he was intelligent. I'd never met anyone that had the foresight, vodka with Pepto-Bismol. So I'm going, wow, this is fantastic. So I go in there and they told me, go to the front and sign up. You have to join the group. You give your name, your sobriety date, your phone number. And I did that. And they said, but for a guy like you, that's not enough. I said, okay, what do I need to do? They go, you have to come to our business meeting. I go, I'm in. They told me when it was. I went to that business meeting. And in the business meeting, the person beside me, they said, we need a greeter. And the person beside me just gave me a little shot with the rib, you know, in the ribs with an elbow. And I put my arm up and I got to be a greeter for 30 days. And for 30 days, once a week, I'd come in and you gave me a script. I was the type of guy who needed a script. You don't want to let me go coming up with what I'm going to come up with. And what I did is I say, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. There's coffee over there. Please help yourself and enjoy the meeting. And what I did for 30 days is I looked you in the eyes and I let you look into my eyes. And boy, I'm telling you, letting you look into my eyes scared the heck out of me because you knew, right? So if there's anybody new here, we know what you did and you're still welcome. And so what happened is, for 30 days, I'm the greeter. And I go back to the next business meeting. And this is when you guys started to recognize my potential. And you said, we need somebody to set up. I'm like, what? And they said, that'd be a good job for you. And it was a 3-month commitment. And so for 3 months, they gave me the key. And I went and set up the meeting, made the coffee. 2 weeks into that commitment, I got a resentment. I decided not to set up the meeting. But I went anyway. And I went 10 minutes before the hour and I walk up and there's a guy walking down the alley behind the church. And he goes, can you believe it? The janitor left the door open and we got the meeting set up. And I learned right there, this thing is bigger than me. AA is going on with or without me. And then after that 3-month commitment, I went back and they needed a secretary. And so I was in the race, you know, they had to vote me in and they voted me in. And that was a 6-month commitment. And in that 6 months, there was a person I really respected in AA. And in that meeting, they had the beginning of the meeting, like one thing you did tonight, David, you got right to the meat of the meeting right away. Well, this meeting didn't. This meeting spent 15 to 20 minutes, you know, read, talk. They had roll call. With over 100 people in the meeting, they took a roll call. And so you have to say things like, here, no. It means I'm here and I didn't drink. Or you say here, yes, and that means you drank, right? But they go through the whole 100 members and they ask this, and this person said, it takes a lot of time and I don't like it. This is what I heard. Please change it, you're the secretary. So I changed it and they booed me. They booed me. And what I learned about was a group conscience. I don't do anything here without your permission. And I had to learn another lesson in life where I actually have to respect the wishes of other people. So that was fantastic. And I can tell you this, a month, 3 months, 6 months, another literature commitment. I had a year just by being committed in AA. And it was fantastic. And the other thing that happened, the first meeting I was at, I was handed 3 cassette tapes. If you're new here, we used to listen on cassette. We didn't even see your face. I remember the first time I ever saw Scott Redman, I said, you can't be him. I expected him to look differently. And so what I got, though, was these 3 cassettes. The first one was a gentleman named Earl H. And I laughed. I laughed. I listened to it like 4 times in a day. And I laughed. The next one I heard was Scott R. Bless his soul. He's not with us. I laughed. The third one was a guy named Milton M., also from the Pacific Group. And Milton was in Vancouver. He was a guy who relocated with his wife to take care of her aging parents. And he was just a upstanding guy in our meetings. He was a guy like LA Pacific Group sobriety that brought it up to Vancouver. And he was really, really respected. So I know who he is by his voice. So here I am, maybe 10 days sober. I'm in this meeting. And the meeting is at a place called Alive on the Drive. It's in a Legion, which is a place where military guys drink. And so here we are, huge meeting, 10 o'clock in the morning. And there he is, a celebrity that's been taped. I've listened to his tape. He sees me. I see him. He walks across the meeting and he leans into my ear and he goes, I know you're full of shit. And I'm telling you, it was a life-changing moment. This is the first place I didn't have to lie to you about who I was and what I had done. And it was actually, you guys gave me the tools to share what I was like and what I had done and what I thought. And what I learned too was I had really bizarre thoughts and I was terrified that you could get kicked out of AA for the way you think. Aren't you grateful that's not a rule? But so here I am having these crazy thoughts. And I said, I shared this with this gentleman because I dropped by our central office one day. And if you're ever wondering about anonymity, go to our central office on Kingsway here in Vancouver. The letters are in gray on glass. You can't even see it. Talk about anonymous. It's like, it's really hard to find. And I was standing like 6 feet from it, but I go in, there's Milton working the phones. And I tell him about these thoughts that are just killing me and scaring me. And he said to me, the thought is not the deed. And I shared that with somebody and they said, well, the thought is not the deed, but if you think about it long enough, you're going to do it. And they said, and you want to give your thoughts to God. I go, oh my God, like, does that work? And trust me, it works, right? I get a crazy thought, I give it to God. Crazy thought, give it to God. And sometimes the thoughts are quite fun. So I hang on to them. Not good, but I have to give them to God. And so that really helped me. And then let's have a look at the time here. Jesus, I'm sorry. And so, what happened for me is that 17-year loveless marriage, I started doing some things that I don't recommend you do in AA. I started judging. It saves time. So I'm judging and I'm noticing there's certain things I really don't like about you guys. And one of them is when you talk about your relationship, you say, my partner. Well, I hate that. Partner means 50-50. Both of you contribute. I'm not into it. I'm into getting. So you guys are like partners. And I'm like, oh my God. Like you guys would drink too if you had my wife. And so what it is, I'm complaining about my wife. I'm not nice to my wife. I won't change for my wife. And so then I'm going, I sure notice that a lot of losers in AA, like everybody's divorced. Like what's wrong with you people? Look at me. Well, I shouldn't have done that because I got served papers. So, but the greatest thing about it was in AA, somebody pulled me aside. They said, hey, you're not the first guy to get divorced. And they go, plus you don't love her. I go, oh my God, that's fantastic. They said, give her dignity and grace. You don't love her, make it quick and don't fight about it. And you're a male. You can always work and earn money again. I forgot to mention she earned more money than me. Damn. But because of the job she had and she got a new car every 3 years, I drove that car. I looked like I had it all together, right? And one of the things I noticed is I have the ability to spot a phony in AA. And the reason I can is I'm a phony, right? So here I'm living this phony life. I'm going through the divorce and the divorce was fantastic. I did in my first year, I think I did I did three full sets of steps. The second year I was doing mini step fours around her and all this stuff. And it was fantastic. And I went through a very painless divorce. And by painless meaning, I understand God's will. This thing is about being happy, joyous, and free. Now, what was hard was the custody battle that ensued, right? And so what happens, I had these two little girls, and I went through this custody battle, and I wasn't the first person in AA to go through a custody battle. And what happened is I was over 2 years sober. I'm going through this, and there were four letters read out to the judge and to say I was an unfit father. And they came from my own mother, my own father, my own brother, and my own sister. And it was pointed out to the judge that I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the judge looked at these four letters and went, oh, one of those types of families. And I got 50-50. I got to see, have my kids half time, which is the best I could ask for. And I thank AA for that, right? If I was not sober, I wouldn't have had those kids in my life. And what happened too is that that woman that had 12-stepped me in the workplace, we were friends and we became great friends. And I used to babysit her two boys. And so she could go to meetings and she would babysit my two girls. And so I could go to meetings. And so we're carrying on and we're friends. And, you know, now I'm a single guy. I'd actually behave like a single man for a long time. And I had to learn about, you guys took honesty very seriously. Like before I was sober, honesty was not my friend, right? Like you, if you asked me, where were you last night? None of your business. Who were you with? Nobody. What'd you do? Nothing. Honesty was not my friend. All of a sudden I'm sober. You told me I get drunk. If I lied. And I took that very seriously because I was a stinking, rotten, cheating whore, right? I was not a nice man. And so all of a sudden I'm living this honest life. And this whole honesty thing was just like so intriguing. It was so refreshing. I'd only had to tell one story. If you're new here, be honest, one story. What a savior that was. And so what happens is I've got this friend, she 12-stepped me. I admire her program. We're hanging out. Our kids are hanging out. Everyone's getting along. And then I go, oh my God, I'm in love with this woman. So I tell her, I'm in love with you. And she said, you can't be. That'll ruin everything. And just about 2 weeks before that, she said to me, when I get married, I want you to be my maid of honor. I'm like, okay. And she goes, and if you don't like the guy, I'm not going to marry him. I'm like, that's fantastic. And then I say to her, I'm in love with you. And she goes, no. And she phones her sponsor. She phones my sponsor. I'm like, oh my God. And then what happened was they said, well, how natural. Your best friends, right? What a foundation. And then she says to me, she goes, we're not going to do what all those other people do. You know what I'm talking about, hey, Grant and Harmony. You're not going to do that right away. You're going to wait 90 days. You're going to court. I'm like, court? And I'll tell you this. Okay. If you agree not to have sex with a woman that looks like that for 90 days, you have hit bottom. And I'll tell you, I hit bottom. And you know what? I courted. We went to public places. We went to coffee. We went to meetings. If you're new here, on a first date, don't go to one of your places to watch Netflix. Well, it depends, right? If it's The Crown, it's okay. But no, don't like you're going to put your hand on the stove, right? But this is the thing that I learned. After 90 days, say we didn't like each other. We don't have all that stuff to deal with, that awkwardness where one of you might not go to the meeting anymore. We had this foundation of friendship. And so our kids didn't see us wake up in the same bed until after we moved in together. And if you know my story, which some of you do now, is that was a miracle, right? That was a miracle. And the thing too is what I found out, anything I surrender works out. Like really like let it go, surrender. Now there's areas in my life I haven't surrendered or very slow to surrender or get beaten to a pulp on. And they include work. Anything to do with money. Again, honesty, right? And so what happened is around the money thing, it was just a disaster, right? Like I came to AA and I believed that if you're sober, you get, watch my hands. Bring it, give it, come on. What do you mean work for it? What do you mean earn it? What? Give them a dime for their nickel? I have a degree. But you know what? I had to learn to work again. 6 years sober, my boss comes up to me and he says, I've noticed you're working differently. I went into a depression. It took 6 years for him to notice I'm working differently. I couldn't believe it. I don't even know. Did I tell you guys my sobriety date, April 8th, 2001? I was depressed, man. I couldn't believe it. And then I'm working differently and I'm trying to be honest. And you know, my wife and I, she became my wife, right? I proposed. I had a really romantic proposal on a mountain, ice skating at the top of the mountain here. My sponsee brought up the flowers on the gondola. I got on one knee in the restaurant, got married with an AA wedding, 150 people. Woo! Calmest day of my life. We're married. What my wife never said to me when she met me in that office was, how much do you make? She didn't care. Didn't care about my last name. Didn't care how much I make. Should have asked me how much I made.
I should have.
And around the money thing, I didn't even know I was dishonest. But what happened when I got sober, I thought you had to give me things. Give it. Come on. My boss should just be feeding me leads. And I had to learn how to work. And I also had to learn, like my wife would say, well, we're planning this and this and this vacation. Where are we at with the money? I mistook optimism with truth. Well, I'll have this much. And then she books a trip. I'm like, well, we don't have the money for, and I couldn't even tell her what we didn't have the money for. She found out though, because I phoned her from the gas station. I go, can you pick me up? She goes, why? The minivan just got repoed. Why'd the minivan get repoed? I go, I haven't made the payments for 4 months. She's like, oh, be right there. But I'll tell you what did happen from that is I had to get counseling. I went to my boss to tell him about it. And I started to do things. I did another set of steps around money, not the first, several times. One of the things that came up on all my sets of steps with five sets of steps with five different men, I suffer from entitlement. Don't know where I got it. Hardworking parents, but I'm entitled. And that's a defect. And it was actually until the fifth guy told me, and they'd all told me, that I finally heard it. I just thought they were mean. And this entitlement was killing me. And so I had to learn to work. And if you're new here, what a bitch. I'm telling you, it's like, oh God, help me. But I also believe this. If you surrender your work, you surrender money, you'll be fine. I didn't. Now I surrendered my relationships, love, romance. I surrendered that and I got those gifts. And the key to this whole thing is what you surrender, you get. I can't explain it. You got to surrender to win. And it's worked for me. And I am, you know what? Do I like my career today? I love my career today. I really do. And things changed in my career. Well, before COVID, but things changed. And you know what? It's just been different. But there are days I can revert right back to. And where I like to hide out is self-pity. God hates me. I can't believe this is happening to me again. And that's one of those things is I have a sponsor. He has moral and philosophical convictions galore. His name is Tim Kay. He's a member of the Pacific Group. If you ever drop in there on a Wednesday night, he's got the gavel. He's had that position for 25 years. I'm not about to tell him about the tradition and the power of rotation. Not my job. He's got a sponsor for that. But what happened is I talk to him at 9:30 every morning and I tell him what's going on. And he told me right off the bat, he goes, if you want to be different, you got to do things differently and you've got to do things you don't want to do. And it's that simple. But something that simple for a complicated guy like me, it's something I have to practice and I got to practice it every day. So I'm just looking at the time here. I've never done that before. I'm a guy's like, oh my God, stop him, please. And so what's happened now is we've got four kids. And we have four amazing kids. Now, if you talk to our four kids, their recollection of what happened around the dinner table, there's four different stories. So we've got four kids, four personalities. And, you know, I brought in the two girls. She brought in the two guys. And it was amazing. Like when we got married, those kids adopted each other with a Hawaiian lei ceremony. And one of the things we've done, and one of the things we've never done, is we've never referred to a kid as a stepbrother or a stepsister. We've never used the word half anything. And what it is we're a family and there's enough love to go around for everybody. And we've had the most amazing vacations. We've had the most amazing times together. What we've done is we've raised our kids with the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. When we were going to a movie on a Saturday night, we had a group conscience and everybody got a voice. I don't care if you don't want to see Mulan. Five other people want to see Mulan. Okay. And that's what we did. And what happened is the person that resisted it the most usually enjoyed the movie the most. But what they got to learn was to respect the group conscience, to respect each other's opinions. And now, because of COVID, we have a son that's in Japan. He's really happy there, much to our chagrin. It's like, please come home. But he's loving Japan, right? He's 28 years old. He's a young man. He's very responsible, absolutely self-supporting. We have a daughter with her family in Edmonton and different lifestyle over there, man. It is cold and it is a different life. And then we've got a son and his new wife down in San Diego. And he made a big change, right? He moved down there. And I'll tell you, we're the most excited parents in the world, right? Because one, he's become an excellent surfer. He spent a year on the North Shore. And we're like, oh, please stay in Hawaii, stay in Hawaii, find a Hawaiian because we want to visit. But he found this girl in San Diego and he gets to surf a ton and he's got a lifestyle down there. And he is so different than anybody I've ever known. He's a minimalist, same dinner table, minimalist. He also leads a meditation class. I think some of the women here have joined him on that. And he is like, wow, like where does a kid that young, where do you learn that, right? And he was raised, you know, him and his brother and the two girls. I remember because before Linda and I got together, because she had two kids, she couldn't go to meetings as easily with these two kids. So she brought up in the group conscience and she said, we need babysitting. And the babysitting, that meeting became a babysitting meeting and people threw in extra money to pay for the babysitters. And as our kids got older, they became the babysitters. And Wesley, the oldest, He pulls us aside one day and he says to his mom, can I bring my friend? It's getting really busy. And so he brings his girl from the sixth grade also. And they're doing the babysitting and we're driving home and she breaks down crying back in the minivan. Not the first time I've seen everybody crying in the minivan. You know, that's the type of guy I can be. So she says, my dad could really use this. And so what we did is we did a 12-step call on her dad. I just saw her dad at the beach about 2 weeks ago and he's a sober man today. And you just never know. You just never know what's going to happen if you're doing the right thing, right? And then we've got our last kid. She's 21 years old. And she's moving out. She's moving out. She's just going to graduate from university. And I'll tell you, this is how different she is than me. It took me 7 years to get my degree. And she's going to graduate on time, right? Same dinner table, same parents. And she's going to graduate on time. She's been studying for university for literally 2 years in the room down the hall. She works part-time, she's responsible, and she's moving into her own place. Absolutely responsible. And so what we have is we've got too much place to live in right now. And so what we did is we went and checked out a bachelor suite where she's moving. And the woman showing us the place, Linda says, hey, you got anything else? This is kind of nice. And the woman goes, oh, I've got something that's not even advertised yet. And she shows us two different places and we pick one. It gets even better. What are we going to do with all this furniture that we have for this place, right? Like Linda used to have a step meeting in this room and there are four couches. There used to be 23 women that used to come in here before COVID in this room. And what are we going to do with all the furniture? We got extra beds. We got extra this. We got extra that. And a woman that she sponsors says, you know that so-and-so is starting two sober houses. Oh, why don't you reach out to him? The guy sends four beasts over, holy crap. And these four beasts from the sober house, they take out all the couches, extra beds, four dressers. We're over half moved. And it came together so fast God, like the only person that can script that is God, right? Because I'm upset, I'm worried, I'm like, I'm crazy. What am I gonna do? My back! I can't do this. My back. Like, and it just works out, and it's like, holy smokes, this life of ours is beyond anything I could have script. And you know what else? I am the luckiest guy because, you know, when some people, they don't think they get what they deserve. I definitely did not get what I deserve. I got more. Right. I was a guy that used to, when I drank, when I was really hungover, I used to like to go to matinees. Used to sit there, eat crap, drink some soda, feeling like crap. And if you talk to me too, I don't eat crap. I'm a vegetarian. Right. But I'll tell you this, when I feel like crap, I eat crap. Right. And I just, there's another example of just complete dishonesty. Right. And so all of a sudden, like, I don't go to matinees anymore, hiding anymore. I wonder if there's a correlation by going to 14 matinees in a summer and not making any money at work. Probably. But it was, what happens now is I go to work. You know, that this is quite funny. During COVID, I work at home. They sent us, what happened is my wife went down to Malibu to Sharon C's retreat. There were these amazing women. They all went down. My wife says, hey, why don't you come down? I stay in a motel while she's there. I'm going to the meetings in Malibu. It was incredible. And we get home and the office says, go home. What? Yeah, you've been out of the country. Go home. And then second day they say to everyone else, go home. We're locked down. And so they send me home. I've got my laptop. I brought 3 files home. I figured I'd be back at work at Friday. No. Maybe in a few Fridays. But so here I am at home. But I'll tell you what I did because of AA. I get up, I shower, I shave, I wear a collared shirt, and I wear a pair of slacks to work from home. I'm the type of guy that has no discipline. And God gives me discipline. So I'm not the guy that's running around in his sweats or his box. Well, no, I'm not. Do I want to be? Yes. Is that who I am? Yes. But because of you and Zoom, and you guys did things like, you showed up here. There's people like, and Harmony knows this from the Pacific group. It's like, I may not sound sober, but a shirt and tie, I look sober. And that's how it works, eh? And it's the little things. And it's by doing the little things differently that I become different. And so I got to look at the time here. And you know what? You've had enough of me. I'd love to hear from you. So God bless. I want to thank you all. And I love you. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. I'm going to allow everyone to unmute and say thank you. That was wonderful.
Eric. Thank you, Eric.
That was thank brilliant. You, Eric.
Thank you, Eric. Yeah,
love you.
Thank you.
Right on,
man.
Thank you, Eric.
Thank you, sir.
Very good.
Thanks, Eric. That was wonderful.
Thank you, Eric.
All right, I'll take it back. Sorry, Eric. It's still going to be you. at this time we're gonna give Eric a break and observe the seventh tradition. I'd like to make one more plea for your questions. Larry is waiting for them. Please submit them. Anything about AA or Eric's story, go ahead and send them in. You'll see some links or a link. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. Are there any announcements for the good of AA tonight? All right, I see your hand, Ebony. Let me make sure you can unmute. There you go.
Hey, y'all. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Ebony.
Hi, Ebony.
I always pause for that. Thank you, David. I don't feel crazy. Coming up this month in a couple of weeks, March 19th through the 21st, the Virginia Area Committee, VAC, you know, those three letters, we are having our spring assembly. There's conversations going on about you know, fifth editions of the big book, changing the stories, simple language, making workbooks. Oh my, spicy talk, right? Well, they have committee meetings going on that Friday night. Please, please, it's an open meeting. It's free registration, but you must register to be in attendance. If you're a member of a home group that's active, please talk to your GSRs and make sure that your group is being represented. It's super important that all of our voices are being heard. So that's March 19th through the 21st. If you have any questions, I'll put my info in the chat, and I can also tell you how to register, or you can find it on aavirginia.org as well. Thanks.
Thank you, Ebony. Any other announcements? All right, District 14 also has on the fourth Wednesday of each month throughout 2021, we're doing a concepts workshop, 7 p.m. on the fourth Wednesday of each month. And so we've had two so far, January and February, concept one and two. I just threw a link in the chat to last month's concept two workshop. It's been put on YouTube for anybody who's interested in that. But anyway, it's open and it'll be happening all throughout the year. You can find information for that at tidewaterintergroup.org. All right. Going once, twice, three times on announcements. All righty. Thank you all. Let's see. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. We can talk about it. Home group members, please raise your hands. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here after we close this meeting. Please stick around. You may have come in alone, but you do not have to leave that way. Or if you're shy, feel free to send an email to info@simpleactions.net. All right, Eric, that was wonderful. Thank you so much. Let's see what the questions look like. All right, we got some questions coming in. The first one, how did you relearn or what did you do differently? What were the actions associated with learning how to work again?
Yeah, what I had to do is I had to admit it. So step one, and so I had to do a full set of steps several times. And so step one, I'm powerless. I'm powerless over work. My work life and my financial life are unmanageable. And I had to come to terms with coming to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, because around work and money, I'm insane. And then I had to make a decision. Oh man, what a drag. And I had to make that decision to do it differently. And what I had to do there was I had to lean on people and I had to lean on a sponsor. And then I had to do through that fourth step, and I had to write down, you know, I'm mad at all the different things I'm mad at. And I'm and even when I look at like who the resentments were, the resentments in the fourth step showed up. I hate freeloaders. I'm a freeloader. Right. I hate guys that live off the government. Oh my God. I want that. Right. And I had to do it all. And then I had to do the step five, the six and seven. It's I think 14 lines in the book. I spent about 14 minutes, and that's what cost me. Six and seven. And what I had to do instead is I've had to do for six and seven is carry a little notebook and write it down as it comes up. I'll write down entitled. Oh, I'm feeling sorry for myself. Oh, God doesn't like me. I know God loves you guys. I hear, see the evidence, but when things go wrong for me, it's like, and so again, six and seven. And then, then it's eight and nine. Oh, and I'm still doing it. So, and eight and nine is, and if you're new here, you don't have to give anybody your money. You have to give them their money. And it's like, oh my God. And then 10, you just have to practice it every day and look at it. And that's one of the reasons I talked to a sponsor. And then I have to pray and meditate on it. But one of the miracles is when I help other people, when I think of others before myself, when I'm working with new guys, it all works out. And so I had an experience very early. I phoned a sponsor. I was whining. And he says to me, are you working with any new guys? I go, as a matter of fact, I am. I've got one in the car right now. He goes, don't worry. It'll work out. Click. And I can tell you this, if you're working with new people, it's going to work out.
All right. I hate to do this to you, but somebody sent this in. Can you share any experience with the 12 concepts?
Yeah. The 12 concepts, basically, things like the power of rotation and like the ones that are really important, like the self-supporting, the traditions and the concepts overlap the same way the traditions and the steps overlap, the same thing with the concepts. And what's really important is we got to use the concepts in our home where everybody gets a voice, even the minority gets a voice. So the concepts, probably the least talked about in AA, but I think if you're going to a home group and you're practicing the traditions in the home group, you're doing it without even knowing it. So that's that.
Thank you. This is a specific question. How do you take sponsees through the steps?
Quickly. And so it's the big book. And for step one, XII, XXII, XXV, XX, and it just, it's so simple. But I'll tell you this, is you break it down to a series of questions. And you ask them the questions. I made the mistake early in sobriety. Well, actually, when I first got sober, I wanted to be a sponsor really badly. And I did a pretty good job. And by that meaning is I asked a lot of guys. And then I wanted to be their friend. And I think I could have killed people. I think it was the worst thing I could have done for people. And now I'm back to sponsoring people. And the question is, are you willing to go to any length to get sober? Will you take direction? That's that.
Do you turn pages with them? Do you read with them? Do you give reading assignments and then interview them?
I do it like in the big book. It says, at this time, you might not want to show them the book. It's right out of working with others. And if they show any interest, give them the book. But it's going to be up to them. And then read these pages and then call me and let's go through it. And then we'll go through those different pages. But I think it really has to be like you, if they have to want it, I have to be willing to do it with them. And there's guidance, but it's are they willing to take direction?
In the last year, have you had to, how has the COVID, the shutdown affected sponsorship?
Greatest thing that ever happened to AA. Greatest thing that happened ever in AA. It's like in the meeting, it's here are the numbers. Put your number in too. There's a guy today, one day, and I reached out to him. He reached out to me. He goes, you guys mentioned God a lot. Not sure about that. So I told him, I said, chapter four is we agnostics. Why don't you read that and get back to me? So there's something in the book every time. And there's way more people reaching out now than ever. Like this is the greatest thing. I used to have to, you know, it would take me to see 10 great speakers would take me a year of attending roundups. 10 great speakers takes me Friday night. Right?
Yeah. All right, here we go. You knew this question was coming. Any suggestions on how to have a successful relationship when both people are in recovery? Specifically, not acting like their sponsor, not taking their inventory, et cetera.
Oh, well, you know what we do at 4 o'clock on Saturdays, 4 o'clock PST. We are doing a traditions workshop for couples. Anne Marie's there. Let's see who else on this page. Lucky's there. Lucky, you poor bugger, eh? Just started talking to me. So, and what it is we do it with the traditions and we do a tradition a week. And that's the foundation.
Would you be willing to share a little bit about how the traditions work in today in your life, in your marriage, in your relationship?
They work really well. But what it comes down to is...
work with me, man.
You have to. Well, here's the thing. Is if you want to be in a relationship, you've got to be willing, right? You've got to be willing to change for the other person. You want to be a giver. You can't be a scorekeeper. So all my tools for living are gone. And what it is here's the question. Whenever something happens, what would God do? Right? And there's usually a step or a tradition you can lean on. And that's why we have sponsorship too. Like for my sponsor, I'll tell you one of the reasons I'm attracted to him. He never puts his wife down. He never puts his kids down. He doesn't use sarcasm. If you're new here and you think sarcasm is funny, it means to tear flesh. You're angry. Welcome. Oh, here's really important to know about being in a relationship with somebody else that's sober. Four people know everything. I do, she does, her sponsor does, and my sponsor does. If someone ever says to you in a relationship, don't tell your sponsor, you can say, Eric says I have to leave you.
Right. How have you grown your relationship with your higher power?
Oh, a day at a time, right? It's just like every time there's anytime I can surrender something, try something new, open-minded, and I have to pray for all that because that's not natural for a guy like me. So it's a day by day thing.
Okay. We have another question. How exactly do you give your thoughts to God?
Practice. It's like we do anything, right? I'm married one day at a time. I go to work one day at a time. If I can relate everything I do in my life to one day at a time, I can do anything. I can put up with crap one day at a time, right? And sometimes it's, you know, 10 minutes at a time, half an hour at a time. But the other thing is there are so many people in this organization that have already gone through what you're going through. There's always going to be someone that'll say, you should give him a call, but you won't know it if you don't share it. And I start my day with 5 passages from the big book, which get me connected to God right away. I'm actually, just give me 1 second. I'll tell you what they give me, these 5 passages, okay?
We've got plenty of time.
Okay. Hang on. Okay, that's not it. hang on. Oh, I remember what it's under. Here it is. Okay, so I get these 5 readings that I've started, okay? By doing these readings, I get to find out that there is a solution. Page 24. I get rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence. On awakening, we ask God to direct our thinking through the day. We pause, asking for the right thought or action. The big book tells me we are sure God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free, to avoid misery. And AA is not a plan for recovery that can be finished and done with. I think that's page 274. 311 in the third edition. It's a way of life. The key, I used up my right to chemical peace of mind. That's from acceptance. What needs to be changed in me, focus on what's good and not what's bad. Let go of expectation. Finally, ask for the grace to bring love, forgiveness, harmony, truth, faith, hope, light, and joy to every human being. Tall order, we think not. I'm God-smacked. God bless.
Would you be willing to share some amends stories?
Oh, God. Who have I made the best amends to? Well, I'll tell you what really helped me. My father, when he was dying, and my father and I didn't see eye to eye since, well, ever, right? And so when I visited him in the hospital, he was dying. And he suffered immensely. He had cancer in his face. They lopped off part of his nose, part of his cheek. He was a man that prided himself in his looks. It was killing him. He was dying. And he was, I think, you know, they were getting ready to move him into hospice and stuff like that. And when I was in the hospital, I said, it's okay to go, right? And I hugged him and I forgave him. And he laughed. And that was the first time he'd laughed with me in a long time. And I set him free. And, you know, that worked out just great. And as far as the financial amends go, a little trick, if you're going to go make a financial amend, bring money, right? People will give you slack, if you show sincerity, right? Because I'm the king of insincerity. Don't worry, you'll get it soon, right? I'm a commission broker. I get paid in chunks. I'll pay in chunks. I'm not living like that today. Today, I like to say $10 down, $10 a month. I try to do a little bit more than that, but it's consistency. And that's one of the things you guys have taught me, consistency.
Did you ever have an amends that you felt didn't go well?
Yeah, my first week of sobriety. And what I did is I did that amend without the guidance of a sponsor. The thing that haunted me most I went and did without any advice. And it went well for about 5 minutes. And it then terminated that relationship for the rest of my life. And if you're going to, you know, and the thing is, when I got sober, I wanted to make that amend so badly, but I did it without the guidance of a sponsor. It made it worse. Oh, the other amend that really important, and I don't make light of this. You know, I was a scumbag, and there was this thing I believe that I have to go back and make amends to women. And somebody in AA pulled me aside and they said, if you really want to show these women you're different, stay out of their life. Thank you, God. Yeah. Thank you, God. Right.
Thank you. Let's see. I'm just going to read this. Sometimes I interpret the questions. I need to not do that. You said four family members still saw the old you after 2 years. Did your relationship with your family improve? If so, how did that happen?
Okay. My family are drinkers. And they thought it was a problem of willpower that I had. And none of them did cocaine. So they just didn't see life the way I did, you know. And when I got sober, and then when I got married, and they returned the wedding invitations, they returned gifts. I would make these gestures with no expectation, really. But I'll tell you this, by blending a family, and by having Linda in my life, my family not being in my life, that was God working in Linda's life and working in those boys' lives, right? They didn't have to be subjected to that. So I'm very grateful. Yeah, and what I also ended up doing is I married into a sober family. Linda's mother was, 40 years in Al-Anon. Her dad died sober. Her brother was a recovering heroin addict in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got to have the love there, and worked out great.
Yeah, I was thinking when you were sharing, LSD makes me thirsty too. but yeah, that really is a powerful part of your story when you're talking about the custody battle and here these four letters against you are from mom and dad and at least one of your siblings, right?
Two,
both your siblings. And then so you made amends to your father, but the sibling relationships have kind of remained where they are, estranged or strained.
My brother showed up a few years ago and with a t-shirt with the name of 10 guys on the back. Mine was included. One of the guys I used to hang out with was paying for a flight and accommodation and equipment rental in Maui. They were bringing their acid dealer. He was going to bring 100 lot of LSD and the intent was to get me loaded. And what happened was I had to talk to a sponsor. I go, what do you do? And he goes, you can do two things. You can tell them that you're in AA. And if that doesn't work, just tell them you found God.
Instant bummer. Yeah. How did you handle that? I'm just curious.
That's how I handled it.
Yeah, right on.
Oh, and then what I did with my brother was I actually got somebody from AA to say, you got to really watch this because he's not being honest. Cause I wanted it to be healed so badly that I couldn't see the truth. And so what I had to do is I had to learn to look at the actions and not the words. Mm. That was sponsor guided prayer.
Right on. Let's see. How do you guys keep AA first with all those kids and family / work obligations?
No, the question is, how do you not? I'll tell you why I keep AA first is because we have fun, right? I got a book that says we absolutely insist on enjoying life, right? And what happened, and here's something else that happened to me. When I came to AA, I met Linda in the workplace. When I came to my first AA meeting, I thought all of you guys were like her. happy, on fire for AA. I was a little disappointed. I had a whole new set of resentments when I met you guys. But what happened is, because of Zoom and all these things, there are pockets of enthusiasm that we're tied into. My wife goes to Israel every Wednesday. Okay. We go to Los Angeles 6:30 every morning, right? We have friends there. I actually know things about their lives. I know more things about your lives through Zoom and the consistency of attending certain meetings than I do from people from my live meetings in my home group. Oh, the other thing we did, we brought kids to world conventions with us.
Everywhere.
They're like, we can dance. You can dance, right? It was like incredible. So they've been to, like, they had so much fun to San Antonio, but we've just had so much fun. We brought them to a young person's conference before. It's been great.
Wonderful. Do you have suggestions on how to better my meditation? My racing thoughts breed fear and negativity.
Okay. Okay. Well, a couple of things. You can join our son's meditation group, but hey, I think that's called a promotion. So, but what it is when you wake up, you just do this: God, 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 God. And then you just repeat it about 55 times. And you just start with little things like that. And you just like, oh, God, 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 God. And it just practice. And I don't know about you. I do a ton of practice. Like if I wake up at 3 a.m, I can either stay awake or I can just start saying prayers. Lord's Prayer, Serenity Prayer, St. Francis Prayer. I'd like to say the 3rd or the 7th, but I've never memorized those.
All right. Let's see. Is there such a thing as too many sponsees?
No, I think I need just one more right now. But the other thing that happens with sponsorship,
I have one less than I need.
But the other thing that happens with sponsorship, there's a gentleman we love to listen to named Israel. And he was asked, how many people do you sponsor? And he answered this, about half, right? Like not everybody wants this thing. You can't make them do it. And there are people you're gonna meet in here that you want it for them so badly, right? But you know what, it's sad. But I'm available for sponsorship.
One less than I need.
How long should somebody be sober before sponsoring others?
One day. When this thing started, it actually says on page 20, mm-hmm. which is before we've done any steps, page 20, our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depend upon our constant thought of others and how we may help meet their needs. And what all you do is, by having that person call you, you stay a page or a step ahead of them. And that's all you need to do. And when this thing got going, you got to remember after 1 year, there were 7 people sober. So I'd be sponsoring Grant and then I'd get loaded. Then Grant would sponsor me. Then he'd get loaded. Then I'd sponsor him. And that's how we did it. Right. But what happened to me when I got sober, it was suggested I was going to this meeting and it was my first week. I had a lot of business cards because I wasn't using them. I would give them out to people at the meeting. And so the thing is, and I remember saying it like, what do I do if they call? And they said, don't worry about that. God decides who calls. And just so you know, nobody called, but I stayed sober by making that gesture. It's by making the gesture I stay sober. It's not by getting, it's by giving.
Somebody would like you to share the link to the tradition meeting that you mentioned.
Happy to.
If that's possible.
Yes.
All right, here's a good one. How do you avoid drifting into worry, remorse, and morbid reflection?
There's these step 11 questions that my wife put together, and what she does is she read step 11 in the
eye.
Hang on, I'm gonna see if I can find it here. Okay, here, I got it right here, yeah. So what she did is she was reading step 11 and then she goes, oh, and then she just did it in the eye. I will not be, and so instead of reading it the way we do, is I will not be resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid. By doing that, I will not owe an apology. I will not keep something to myself. I will share it with a sponsor right away. I'll be kind and loving to all. I will do better today. I will not think of myself most of the time. What can I do for others? What can I pack into the stream of life? I will not drift into worry, remorse, or morbid thinking. I will be useful to others. Asking God to forgive me if I don't do it 100%. And I ask God, what corrective measures can be taken? I consider these plans for the day, and I ask God to direct my thinking. Now, on a great day, I do that, right? And there are days I have to do that over and over, right?
Oh, thank you for the link. Well, okay, so speaking of the 11 steps, somebody wants to know if you, or maybe you could just describe what it looks like, but the question is, do you write down the answers to the question after when we retire at night, every night?
Yeah, you know what I think? This is just what we've been practicing is we go to the page 84 from step 10 and we answer those questions. And then step 11 in the morning. So it's really that step 10 review and writing those out. That's really helpful. And it, you know what, it's hard being consistent on that if you're a guy like me.
Okay. So like I'm thinking about that, continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. That's what you do at nighttime. Did I have selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, yes, and fear? Am I keeping something to myself? Okay. But all right.
But put it all in the eye.
And then it's like, I'm not going to have to tell someone. I'm going, you know, like it changes the whole way you see your day.
It becomes an affirmation.
Right. Oh, now somebody wants a link to your son's meditation meeting. Okay, let's see. The next one is, do you sponsor through, well, I think you already answered this, but I'm going to ask it out of respect. Do you sponsor through the big book only, or do you use other books like the 12 and 12?
Yes, use anything conference approved, but the 12 and 12 and the big book are the ones. Okay. The one thing that's really important for me anyway is the 12 by 12, particularly 6 and 7, because there's 14 lines in the big book. And I don't think it does it justice for something that important.
All right. So I'm going to offer the group last call on questions. I have one more and then we'll wrap if there's no more. So you talked about, oh good. They're coming in. Yeah. You talked about that early membership in the home group and the commitments that you said yes to and how that kind of carried you. It sounded like the first year or year and a half. Could you share a little bit about what being a member of a home group has been like for you throughout your sobriety? Or?
Okay. Well, I'm a bit righteous, but I do believe this. Okay. I believe if I don't have a home group, my home life will suck. Because what I learn here and in this, I bring home. I also believe if I don't go to the business meeting, my work life will suck. And so what I had to do is, there was one job in AA I just would not do. I wouldn't be the treasurer. And what happened is we got this junkie that took on the treasurer's position and he was committed. And after 1 year, he spoke to the group and he said, before I took this job, I'd never balanced a checkbook. And he goes, I just bought my first car. And I remember sitting there going, I'd like a car. And I became the treasurer. And it changed my life. That's when the work, when I started to pay attention to being a treasurer in AA, I got to take that into my world here. And I don't do it perfectly.
I like that. My home life, if I'm not a member of a home group, my home life will suck. If I don't go to the business meeting, my business life will suck. That's nice. People are also looking for your contact info, Eric. What other spiritual literature do you encourage your sponsees to read, if any?
Well, there's the 5 pages from the big book. And then I think anything spiritual in addition to that is just a bonus. Right. But one of the things you can almost do, I can say to a sponsee, did you do your morning readings? And no matter how they answer, yes or no, the response is, I can tell.
Do you have an opinion or guidance Yeah. All right. I'm just going to read what's written. What meeting formats do you think are important to attend?
I love speaker leads and, where I get to relate. So I think it's really important to go to a speaker meeting. I think it's great to go to a big book study. I think a step study, traditions. When I got introduced by the first step meeting I went to was step 1 week, tradition next week. It's fantastic. You can't go wrong reading stuff in AA. And there's really no such thing as too much AA. What, you're gonna be too nice? Right? Too forgiving? It's just like, this is it. Like, this is the greatest thing in the world.
All right. We're out of questions. I'd like to give Linda a chance to rebut anything that Eric has said here tonight. Or if you have anything you'd like to wrap us with before we close.
Alcoholic Linda, it's been a pleasure. Laughing and kind of saying, you know, the thing that I love about, I'm a real believer, if you keep AA and God first, all things are possible, right? And definitely we stay married one day at a time, keeping AA first. And one of those questions is how, when we were so busy with four kids, like doing AA, the greatest thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is like, he would have the kids when I'd go to my woman's step room, and I have the kids when he would go to his men's step group. Like, we always made sure, then we had family night, then we had date night. Like, we had routine and discipline. That's how. And the thing that's so great about having routine and discipline in your kids' life is then they have routine, they have discipline. And when you have discipline, like, you know, you don't think it, but kids love discipline. Like, I always say to people, kids loved bedtime in our house because they got, like, you know, dad would do the bap rubs, mom would do the song, then we'd all read the book, and we'd all read a book together in our bed. And I want you to know, like, I just get so grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous, because when our kids, as they got bigger, whenever everyone would come for dinner, they'd all want to go talk on the bed. So, like, when your kids get to be teenagers, you got like four teenagers, sit, everyone's on the bed still, right? And the other thing that was so cool about that, the idea of our kids, is they always had a voice. They always had phrases like, oh, what's the matter? Got to work through your fears, you know, or like, shouldn't you call your sponsor? Like, that whole idea. And the fact that they could say, okay, we need to talk now, you need to listen, you know, and just the idea that they believed, you know, well, even our son, the one that meditates, started meditating very early for a kid, like, because they believed in our house, who's boss? If you asked our kids who's boss, their answer, God. Not mom, not dad, God, right? And that's, you know, that ability to walk through and go through anything was really a gift. And the other great thing, I believe that our kids, because we always read the big book first thing in the morning, we have our coffee. When they were little, they would literally wake us up, drop the big book. Okay. Because they knew they got to go watch Sesame Street while we did our readings. And then as they got older, you know, I just always, you know, get so grateful they'd join us. Like, they would come and they would read with us in the morning, like, through that, you know, so we never know the kind of example we're being. And even Amanda's, I'll just tell you, end with this. Like, one time we were in McDonald's, and not McDonald's because we're vegan, but we were at a fast food joint, and I yelled at I was so short tempered because we were hungry, and I got all mad and rah, rah, right? The poor attendant. We walk outside, we literally stop. I go, oh my God, I have to go back in there and apologize. So the kids are like, yeah, she's got to go apologize. So they come back in, watch me do the amends. I apologize. I said, it wasn't your fault. I'm just hungry. It's no excuse. I shouldn't have taken it out on you. And then we all go back. And the kids, our kids are great at making amends as a direct result of, they see what they, you know, like, it's about action here. Action and more action. And you can say, till you're blue in your face to your kids, this. But it's what we're doing. It's what we're, how we're reacting, you know, and like that ability to be, you know, one of the things in AA it taught me is like, I can be angry if I'm expressing a feeling, but it's not okay to go kick the door in, right? Which alcoholics can tend to do too. So we make amends when we get crazy, right? Like, but that's such a gift for our kids to one thing our kids are very good at, all of them, is being real about stuff. And I always love my boys, like, they're always like, they ask anything. It's like, so how do I know when to kiss a kiss? Like, how do we know when to kiss? How do we know when to, you know, have sex? Like all these questions that they would ask, it'd be like, well, you need to be comfortable. And then I'd make jokes. You never want to do it how I did it. Get to know them, be comfortable. Like, and you know, and then the thing is that the reason I'm saying that is because that ability to do that, my kids all wanted to do things sober with their dates. Like, they never did it drunk first. They wanted to do it sober. You know, like, it was kind of miraculous to watch them, and all doers, like the girl or guy they went out with had to do stuff with them. And I know it's because we're doers. Like, our kids hung out with us. We used to laugh. Our kids hung out with us like long, like our 18 and 21 year olds still want it. They'd still come on vacation with us. And I don't know about you, but that says a lot about Alcoholics Anonymous. Mm-hmm. That says everything about Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and I was laughing when they were little that we took them to a meeting in Hawaii one time and we let them play on the beach and a full on fist fight broke out in the meeting, like full on. And the kids come running up and they're going, oh man, is this like AA? I want to come to Hawaii AA all the time. You know, it's like, they're going like, no, no, no. And then the gift is the next morning, those two members showed up again and they made amends. So again, our kids got to see. So, you know, you never know the magic you're carrying by being the best. I love this. Be the best big book you can be, and then take it one farther. Be more. Be more than that, right? Be the example for your kids. Be the example of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And that's why that pause, like, God is in the pause, man. So if you can't say something nice, just don't speak. Just pause and pray, and you'll be better off than if you opened your mouth, right? And, you know, it's a real gift and a testament. Like, you know, we could go into all the things that our kids accomplished. And it was, you know, one of the reasons we were in Virginia is because our kid won Top Gun or whatever the hell that thing's called. You know, he was a quarterback. And for a Canadian to be a quarterback playing in Texas and Virginia and those places, it was pretty cool, man. And we went to meetings and they went to football, you know, and like, it's truly, truly a gift that, you know, that our kids are examples of kids, you know, that grew up in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And they all have the tools, right? They have tools. And whether or not they become one of us, because I always think if our kids become here, they, like my oldest son said something to me one day. He was saying, like, he was really hungover and he was telling, oh, yeah, and he's going on. And I go, well, honey, you always know we're saving a seat for you. And he starts laughing. Huh? And then he goes, hey, wait a minute. That's not funny. I go, well, yeah, maybe not. Anyways, so, you know, it's a real gift to be an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Thank you. Thank you, Bo. Thank you for your example tonight. This was absolutely amazing. Everybody will get an opportunity to thank Eric and Linda again after the Lord's Prayer. I'd like to thank everybody who participated, who made this meeting possible. Thank Larry for the questions, and all of you for taking a chair tonight on Sunday night. Mm-hmm. And Miss Debbie D, could I ask you to read the last three paragraphs on page 164, please? I will throw those on the screen. I started to say I'll throw them up, but I didn't want to say throw up.
I'm an alcoholic. My name's Debbie. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thanks.
Thank you so much. All right, I am going to check the box that allows you to unmute. Oh, it's already done. How about we virtually circle up and feel free to unmute, and we'll have a Jimi Hendrix version of the Star Spangled Banner Lord's Prayer. Feedback, welcome. Hmm. Whose father?
Our Father.
Our Father.
Who art in heaven.
Hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom,
power, and the glory,
forever and ever.
Amen.
Keep coming back.
Thank you, Eric. Thank you, Linda.
Thank you, guys.
Thank
you so much. That was
thank you. Amazing.
Really good.
So good.
Thank you, sir.